I want to thank Kentaro and Boris and all of you for coming here to this seminar at this unusual, extraordinary kind of seminar for this unusual time. And the title, somewhat extended title, what I'm going to talk about is Non-Semisimple Verlinde Algebras, Modular Group Representations, and Quantum Groups. And I first describe three main ingredients that I will be dealing with, and then I will make like a rather extended introduction, and then try to give you the precise statement. So the three objects are Verlinde algebras, which to me will be just synonymous as fusion. Physicists often call them fusion algebras. The second thing is modular group representations. And the third thing I will be talking about is the Kasdan-Lustig correspondence, functor, if you wish. So the first two are objects, and the third is a relation between different kinds of objects. We had a very nice talk here today, here on Friday, I guess. Jan Soibelman was giving a talk, and he started with a very sophisticated transparency with various kind of relations there. So I will also want to have a... Before I proceed, I would like to draw a picture showing where these things occur, and then I will describe what they are. So this is a vertex operator algebra, and it has some representations. Some representation category of a vertex operator algebra. And the Kasdan-Lustig functor relates these to representations of a certain quantum group. This is a quantum group and its representations. And that's the existence of such a functor is a powerful statement in conformal field theory in related subjects, because it allows you, the functor is not exact from either side, but it allows you to study usually more controllable objects, representation of certain quantum group, instead of representations of vertex operator algebras. In a certain sense, it replaces one object with totally different and more controllable objects. By vertex operator algebra, I will mean something very simple. You can just think of it as a conformal field theory, or if you prefer, you can think of conformal field theory as a representation theory of some fixed vertex operator algebra. And characters of representations, which are partition functions on a torus, and these characters in conformal field theory, they carry a representation of the mapping class group, which for simplicity I will just consider SL2Z. And there is a parallel object on the right-hand side, on the quantum group side, where you have the center of your quantum group. And it also carries, an SL2Z representation. This is the relevant names here are Lubashenko, Turayev, well, maybe others as well. Now let me return to the left-hand side, to the vertex operator algebra, or if you wish, conformal field theory side. In the classical cases, in the so-called rational conformal field theory, you can proceed further, and Verlinde, the result by Erik Verlinde is that from SL to Z action on the characters, you derive diffusion algebra. So here, that's where one of my ingredients appears, fusion. And on this side, you have a Grothendieck ring of your quantum group. And what I will try to describe for you is three statements which, if you wish, extend this Kasdan-Lustig function. I will consider this picture in a non-semi-simple case. This is mostly worked out for rational conformal field theories, where you have a finite number of presentations, finite number of primary fields, and these representations allow no extensions, no non-trivial, there exist no non-trivial extensions. The category is semi-simple. I will try to extend this, and I will present an example where this general picture and correspondence between vertex separator algebras and quantum groups extend to the non-semi-simple case. And in that case, I will consider a class of conformal field theories, which physicists call logarithmic conformal field theories. The most characteristic feature there is that different representations allow non-trivial extensions. And nevertheless, this whole ideology of Kasdan-Lustig function can be pushed forward to that case as well. And actually, the situation becomes even more straightforward than in the rational case. I will tell you later why, in which respect. So the three main statements that I'm going to make are, first, these two things coincide. Again, I will consider a certain example of a logarithmic conformal field theory. So this picture has to be, the left-hand side for sure, has to be adapted and has to be modified to extend it from the standard rational semi-simple case to the logarithmic or non-semi-simple case. For a series of logarithmic conformal field theories, I will establish an equivalence here. It's just the same object. But that is not all. These two actions, these two SL2Z representations are equivalent. So this is the first statement, equivalence. This is the second statement, which I do not derive from the first. It is just two parallel observations that I make. And that is not all. Actually, I won't talk about it now because the proof isn't finished, but there is very strong evidence to believe that actually the categories are totally equivalent, are just equivalent. And this result is something the station here is much better than in the rational case, because in the case of rational conformal field theories, here you also have quantum groups, and Grothendieck rings and representation categories of quantum groups are typically not semi-simple. Whereas here, in the rational case, you do have semi-simple categories. And special measures have to be taken to make the two things correspond. That's what they call Kasdan and Lustig, I guess, call this negligible models will have to be neglected on the one side of this picture to make things parallel. Okay, so in the rational case, what happens in the rational case is that you have more complications here, and you really have to get rid of them to maintain correspondence. And there was a paper by Anne Lakowska, I guess, which was, she had to apply rather sophisticated techniques here to make objects associated with quantum group look exactly like things you derive from conformal field theory. Surprisingly, taking logarithmic conformal field theory makes the whole thing much more straightforward. Where should I move? Okay, now, Verlinde algebras. So my first And I will describe for you the three. That was an introduction to the introduction. Now I will describe the three main ingredients for you. Verlinde algebras, fusion algebras. This is some kind of, if you want, cohomological, or if you wish, K-theory-like information about conformal field theory. It is a finite dimensional object which captures some features of, in a sense, infinite dimensional object operator product expansions. In conformal field theory, you have states in your representation spaces. What you do, you arrange your, organize your states into a finite number of heaps, x1, x2, etc., xn, such that for any x1 from the first heap and any x2 for the second heap, and any given x3, the number of x3 from big X3, such that x1, x2, x3 is non-zero, is independent of x1 and x2. This is a three-point correlation function. I certainly have no time to explain what it is. It's just kind of a machine which gives you a number with three entries. And actually, this is a very reasonable statement. It underlies the definition on what people in combinatorics call association schemes. There, association scheme, association, there is a, the standard book is by Banaito. And this is the most general formulation of any combinatorial problem, where this is the relation that they have, and just this very requirement is imposed. How do you actually proceed in conformal field theory? In conformal field theory, in principle, you may be able to make different such decomposition of the entire space of states into that kind of heaps with this property. But whenever there's an underlying algebra, of course, these are associated with primary fields or highest weight representations. These are basically synonyms. Highest weight representations. Then this is satisfied. This property is satisfied. And what is more, there is a number of axioms which have to be and are satisfied in conformal field theory, which actually allow you to trade this three-point coupling for in the structure of a commutative associative algebra. It turns out that if you consider these objects, x1, x2, etc., xn, and introduce the multiplication on these objects by the formula. You sum over S2 prime and S prime S2 prime, where N is this number. This is for X1 and X2 and X3. This is almost this number. I'm not going to. Of course, this is symmetric with respect to three indices. There you have to somehow raise one index up. But I'm not going to discuss this. In the standard conformal field theory axiom, this can be done. And the upshot is that you trade these three-point couplings. These are numbers, positive integers, or non-negative integers. You treat the same integers are over here. And this turns out to be an associative commutative algebra. And these n are non-negative positive integers. This is the fusion or Verlinde algebra, and it captures When I say that it's kind of case theory like information about conformal field theory, what I mean is that you start with an infinite number of fields and you arrange it into that kind of groups, that kind of heaps, and you end up with a finite dimensional algebra which captures some crucial features about about your conformal field theory, about the operator product expansion of that conformal field theory actually. So this is a finite dimensional algebra. For example, when you take SL2, a fine SL2, at level k, where k is 0, 1, 2, etc., then you have k plus 1 irreducible representations, xs. And the fusion is the multiplication, xs, xs prime, you have to sum over s2 prime with step equal to 2 up to a rather sophisticated upper limit, k plus 1 minus the modulus of k plus 2 minus s prime. That's the fusion in fine SL2 theory. It can be derived by various means. There are purely representation theoretic derivations. There are conformal field theory derivations. The idea here is that, okay. Pardon? The upper bound is k plus 1 minus k plus 2 minus s prime. The actual case is that you go with step 2 from the difference, basically from the difference, go up with step 2, but as soon as you reach about k plus 1, you rather than going straight ahead, you sort of reflect and go back, which this is a way to describe just this. This is kind of a quantum... It is, right. I'm not sure I can rewrite it correctly now in that minimum form. It always takes time to figure out how it works. All right. That's about Berlin algebras. The subject is mostly studied for minimal kind of theories like this one or for Virasoro or for some other algebras where representations cannot glue to each other, have no extensions. Basically, there are two related facts in rational conformal field theories. Berlin algebras are semi-simple. They are semi-simple, and that means that as an associative algebra, it is just actually you can. What does that mean? That means this is isomorphic as an associative algebra. It is just isomorphic to some matrix algebra over complex numbers, which means that the algebra is generated by a number of primitive idempotents, such that ES, ES prime is delta S, S prime, ES. These are orthogonal projectors, and they just span the algebra. But of course, a fusion algebra is not merely an associative algebra. It comes to you equipped with a special basis, a basis where multiplication has this form. Multiplication has non-negative integer structure coefficients. So as an associative algebra is not an interesting object to study, but fusion algebra involves more information. And the second related thing that occurs in the rational case is that representations have no extensions. Whenever you want to construct something like this, that would always split. Some time ago, physicists have started considering The rational case is summarized in more Zyberg axioms, but some time ago physicists have started relaxing the set of these axioms, where they still deal with a finite number of primary fields, but these different finite number of reducible representations, but these representations are now allowed to have non-trivial extensions among them, and that what was called logarithmic conformal field theories. And as I said, my statements will apply to the logarithmic case. Now, my second ingredient is SL2Z action. And let me remind you that SL2Z is generated by two generators S and T with the relations ST cube is TS cubed is S squared and S to the 4 is 1. So whenever I want to have a representation of that algebra on anything, all I have to do, and that will be my strategy, to define the action of an S and of a T such that they satisfy these relations, then I'm guaranteed that I have nothing but an SL to Z representation. And where this representation lives in conformal field theory setting. In conformal field theory setting, whenever you have the characters of your representations, you apply S acts on a given character, chi S. Characters is a partition function on a torus. Chi is a character. It is a partition function on a torus with a modular parameter tau. And S acts as tau goes to minus 1 over tau. And T acts just by sending this to chi of tau plus 1. And in the rational case, what happens in the consistent conformal field theory? The case is that whenever you take a given character, chi s, and evaluate, I'm sorry for so many s's, but somehow it happened accidentally. You substitute minus 1 over tau into its argument. What it turns out to be some matrix S prime, chi S prime of tau. A consistency of a conformal field theory tells you that modular transformed characters must be linear combinations of the set of characters that you have. And this is this matrix defines for you a representation of SL2Z together with a similar T matrix, defines for you a representation of SL2Z on the set of characters of your finite set of characters of your conformal field theory in the rational case. And in the rational case, the Verlinde formula relates these matrices with just these coefficients. And it works as follows. First, let me arrange those coefficients which I want to obtain from S into matrices. I introduce NS as a matrix whose entry at S prime and S2 prime is nothing but small n, S prime, S2 prime. And then it turns out that this matrix, and it's just a rewriting of the information contained in any structure constants. And then this NS, each of these, is just this S. Then certain stuff in the middle, labeled with a small s. Where these are two diagonal matrices. This is the diagonal matrix, and here we have inverse elements. They are inverse to a given row in this very matrix. Zero refers to the vacuum. Among your representations, there is a vacuum representation. There is the character corresponding to the vacuum representation, and it gives you a very special row in your S matrix. So you take that row, unfold it along the main diagonal, and take the inverse. And the matrix K, that's K, and S twiddle is just another row of this matrix. This is not labeled. This has no label S. I'm sorry about that. K doesn't depend on the small s. It's just a fixed. The index zero here refers to the vacuum, and this does have a that label. Just the F row of your S matrix, which you also place along the diagonal, but do not take the inverse now. So this is the classic formula of Verlinde. It's difficult to believe when you look at that, that you necessarily get positive, non-negative integers as a structure coefficient. So this formula gives you just non-negative integer numbers, although this matrix is usually some irrational. This is numerical matrix, some sines or cosines or whatever. All this is for rational theories. And in rational conformal field theories, this statement is sometimes summarized as the saying that the S matrix diagonalizes the fusion rules. What it actually does, this transformation, you see, this similarity transformation by S, takes your basis reducible representations, takes that basis into the basis of primitive idempotence in your algebra. And this formula expresses nothing but that. Now, so much about Verlinde algebras. I'm just a reminder how things work in the rational case. And now my third ingredient, Kasdan-Lustig correspondence, a functor if you wish. This is basically the statement that whenever you have a vertex operator algebra, you may be able, and in all known cases, well, eventually you are able, to find a quantum group such that the representation category of that quantum group has very much to do, or is strongly related by, to the representation category of reducible to the representations of your vertex operator algebra. The details have to be worked out in every particular case. This works much as a principle that some correspondence must exist, but for instance, for SL2K, for K integer positive and integer negative, it works differently, and precise statements are different. But all in all, it's a very powerful statement, because in each particular case, it allows you, to a certain extent, replace the study of very complicated object of your vertex operator algebra by the study of a much more controllable object, a certain quantum group. It doesn't tell you what this quantum group. It's not quite always clear what the quantum group has to be. It works very much like a principle. That's it about that correspondence, because the rest of my talk will be an example of this correspondence in logarithm conformal field theory. So the plan of the rest of my talk is, I will remind you of, define for you what I call 1 comma p logarithmic conformal field theory model. Of a quantum group, of a quantum group, which it doesn't tell you what kind of quantum group this is. You really have to. Pardon? Oh, yes. You see. There are subtleties. For example, how it works for SL2. For SL2, in the case of, in just that case, You have to take, for SL2 hat, for their fine SL2, you have to take quantum SL2 at a root of unity. There are several versions. You have to take what people call small quantum SL2 or baby quantum SL2. But that's not all. Then you have to do something with this representation category. You have to take a quotient of this representation category over the center of the category. After that, it's no longer a representation category of any quantum group. But then you have the equivalence. So it works like there is a quantum group which is related, but how precisely, you really have to work out in each particular case. Yes. Your question is that there wouldn't be like five different quantum groups. Is that what you're asking? Normally, yes. Normally, just one. But, for instance, when you consider the case of negative level SL2, negative integer level, the quantum group is different. It's going to be the Lustig extended quantum SL2, which is quantum SL2 semi-Dirac product with just an ordinary SL2. So. I will define for you a 1, p series where p is 2, 3, 4, etc., series of logarithmic conformal field theories. Then I will define for you quantum SL2. A certain quantum SL2, the restricted one, at a root of unity, q to the 2p is 1 at that root of unity. And then I will state the isomorphism. Equivalences. So, are there any more questions at this point? I will become slightly more technical now. Okay, Where do logarithmic conformal theories come from? Let me remind you what a Katz table is. In what people call minimal models, things like for Verzora over finally algebras, the representations are typically labeled by for SL2 or Verzora by two integers, p prime and p and p prime. And there's kind of a table, which is called Katz table. And for there are roughly p minus 1 times p prime minus 1 over 2 representations, number of representations. Roughly, you have to take care when it's divided by 2, divisible by 2 when not, but roughly that number of representations. And the representation of the Katz table do not allow extensions between them. There are no non-trivial short exact sequences involving these representations. Now, logarithmic theories is just what happens when you extend the Katz table by one row and one column, including this Steinberg module. Then what happens is that immediately it turns out that now representation category is no longer semi-simple. And this is what is called P prime P logarithmic minimal model. It's a rather complicated object. A simpler one, which will be the subject of the rest of my talk, is 1, P, which is just this. The length of this strip is P, and its content as a non-logarithmic theory is zero. It has zero trivial content. If you take this out, you're left with nothing. So this is kind of a limiting case. It exists as a logarithmic theory, but there is no underlying rational conformal field theory obtained by taking some of the fields away.
So
Well, that depends on what you mean by physical. These logarithmic, the original motivation by physicists was that these things have to do with percolation problems. These are non-unitary problems. All of them are non-unitary. And percolation problems are believed to be described by actually, I guess, by a 2-3 model. I'm not quite sure what one comma p corresponds to in percolation terms, but there is a class of problems that motivate the study of logarithmic conformal field theories. It is a conformal field theory, although it does not satisfy all the Moore-Seiberg axioms of rational conformal field theory, because it is not a rational conformal field theory. It appears to be a very natural class of conformal field theories, just extending a rather narrow class of rational conformal field theories. Extending in a rather controllable way, what I mean that properties are not lost, but modified when you go from rational to the logarithmic case. Now let me remind you, I have no time to go into any detail, but actually the standard minimal models are defined by what is known as Felder complex. If you have ever seen any kind of this diagram, Felder complex, and it is the model is the cohomology of Felder complex. What happens here is that the cohomology selects for you only the rational conformal field theory, not the logarithmic part. Here the cohomology is empty. So this model is defined. Okay, one thing I must say, that in conformal field theory language, the Felder complex is built out of what they call screening operators. Screening operators acting on conformal field theory. So these arrows are actually constructed out of screening operators, or just screenings. And the model, this field contents, is just the cohomology of a certain complex built out of the screening operators. Here, the cohomology is trivial, and the theory is defined as a kernel, not cohomology, cohomology is trivial, kernel of a screening. And then, a characteristic feature that occurs in logarithmic conformal field theories is that you first, the basic symmetry that any conformal field theory has to have is the Virasoro symmetry. But Virasoro is actually extended to a larger symmetry, which is typically W algebra, which is the maximum local algebra existing in that kernel. Maximum local vertex operator algebra in the kernel. And in the 1 comma p theory that I want to describe for you, I take one scalar field phi, which depends on a complex variable z, and there is the operator product, just log z minus w, and I construct the energy momentum tensor, which is 1/2 grad phi plus alpha naught over root over just 2 grad squared phi, and alpha naught is alpha plus alpha minus, and these two things are alpha plus is root of 2p, alpha minus is minus root over 2 over p, and that's where p, the p that labels the model, enters. And it turns out that the central charge of this angular momentum tensor is, what is it? 13 minus 6 p plus 1 over p. And this T commutes with the screening operator S minus, not only T but many other things. But the first observation is that your T commutes with the screening. this S minus is e to the alpha minus your phi, alpha minus phi, the screening operator. But as a matter of fact, in the kernel of the screening, on a suitably defined sum of Fock spaces, you have a bigger algebra, a W algebra. This W algebra is generated by three currents, W minus, which is just e to the minus alpha plus phi, W naught, which is S plus, there is a second screening, S plus, which is e to the alpha plus phi, S plus W minus, and W plus is another application of S plus to W, now this time to W naught. So this is a W algebra, which is much bigger than the Virasoro algebra, and because of, for that reason, we end up with a finite number of representations of this W algebra. There's an infinite number of Virasoro representations arranged into that heap I told you about before, into a finite number of W algebra representations. And it turns out that the theory, which is defined as the kernel of the screening, is just a direct sum of S ranges from 1 to P, XS plus, plus XS minus. For some reason, there are two P representations, which are labeled as XS. S runs from 1 to P, plus and minus. None of these are Virasoro generators. These are Virasoro. This is integer momentum tensor. So these are just Virasoro. And these are Virasoro primaries. These guys, three of them, despite the way they look, they actually are Virasoro primaries. Things are conspire such that they are, although they are given, although these are not vertex operator-like things. In this theory, studying a presentation of this W algebra, you write a simple resolution of these representations, you end up with the characters. From now on, k plus minus s of tau characters of W representations. And these are some combinations of theta functions, and their derivatives expressed through, if you wish, higher level theta functions and theta prime with respect to tau. These are, theta and theta prime, are modular forms of different weights. This is a feature of algorithmic conformal field theories. Your characters are linear combinations of modular forms of different weights. Theta and theta prime. And because of that, your S transformation looks, let A be plus or minus 1. Generically, it has this form. You sum over S prime A prime, certain A, S A, S prime A prime, chi, S prime of tau. But that is not all. There is a second term, B S A comma S prime A prime, explicit occurrence of tau, chi S prime A prime of tau. This corrects the difference in the weight between theta function and its derivative. And that is a very crucial thing that happens here. Because of that, you don't immediately have a 2P dimensional representation of SL to Z. This transformation is the S transformation of SL to Z. And this occurrence of tau tells you that you really have to take what occurs here as an independent basis vectors in your representation and keep applying modular transformations to what you have here. Fortunately, because tau only enters linearly, you end up with 3p minus 1 dimensional representation. This 3p minus 1 dimensional representation is spanned by Your characters, chi plus s, s from 1 to p, chi minus s, s from 1 to p. And certain combination, which is tau times p minus s over p chi plus s of tau minus s over p chi minus p minus s of tau. S from 1 to p minus 1. So you have 2p here and p minus 1, which makes it the total of 3p minus 1. 3p p minus 1 representations. And these are characters, and these are not. These are not characters of any representation that you have in the theory. These are just artificial objects from conformal field theory standpoint. I will refer to this. This is a feature of logarithmic conformal field theory. Someone told me that very similar things happen in quantum Hall effect. That you start with characters, and by analogy with the rational case, you expect that you would have an SL to Z representation on the characters. That's not the case. What happens is that you have to extend the characters by some additional just functions which are, have nothing to, well, they are not characters of any representation. There is a explicit occurrences of tau. But you do have a finite dimensional representation. That's a subtle point. That hasn't been studied. That's a mystery. No, I don't. I'm happy with the Verlinde algebra. Pardon? No, I think I have. I have some ansatz that allows me to. I do have model invariance in some cases. That has never been studied in lower theories. It's just nobody cared to study this for the whole series. I believe they exist, and the examination of the Verlinde algebra shows that they exist. This is an algebraic problem. Like you have Verlinde algebra, you have to consider its representations. But they are not. I cannot show them for you explicitly. How am I doing on time? Oh, that's fine. In that theory, where this strange effect occurs, you have Verlinde algebra on the 2p original characters that you have. That you do have a Verlinde algebra, a closing just on these, tells you that you must have I have examples, but not the general statement, that you have modular invariance. And okay, let me introduce temporarily some sign for, or maybe just zero, empty sign for this multiplication. Chi, let me just be axes. Axes are in one-to-one correspondence with the representation. Here are just abstract symbols. So the Verlinde algebra is this. You sum over S prime, start with what you would have started in the rational case. But here you go up to s plus s prime minus 1. And things that occur here are just certain x, s2 prime, a prime, twiddle, where xs, a twiddle, is just x, s, a, as long as s is small enough. But it is just x 2p minus s. A plus 2 x minus a s minus p as long as s becomes big enough. So compared this it has multiplicities 2. Some of the structure coefficients are 2. they're no longer all of them one or zero. And it turns out that you patch the missing, this compared with the SL2 fusion, you just patch the missing interval with representations that come in pairs. That's what happened here with that algebra. So now what I'm interested in now is, where can I find these same objects, this strange maybe something, 3p minus one dimensional, and this fusion on the quantum group side? And I will produce for you a quantum group, which, to begin with, will have 3p minus one dimensional center and just 2p reducible representations. So it will do some of the correspondence, establish some of the correspondence for me. But then it turns out that it comes with an enormous bonus pack. It also allows me to go much further and establish more equivalences. So I take U bar, just a short notation for U bar Q of SL2, at Q is, at Q the primitive 2pth root of unity. And this object is a quantum group, which is generated by E, F, K, and K inverse, such that the most relevant things are e to the p is f to the p is 0, and k to the 2p is 1. These are relations which are compatible with the standard commutation relations in the SL2 quantum group at this root of unity. K to the p is then central. And I won't give you all the standard quantum SL2 commutation relation. Okay, let me just write one. The commutator of E and F is just K minus K inverse over Q minus Q inverse. And there is a set of other, it's a Hopf algebra. There is co-multiplication, co-unit, and antipod. And people have much more than this. This algebra is known, but people do not seem to like it very much because it's not quasi-triangular. It doesn't allow universal R matrix. And much more popular is the small quantum SL2, which is obtained by additionally taking the quotient over K to the P minus 1. This is central. So you take a Hopf ideal generated by this, and you end up with a quasi-triangular small algebra. But that's not the algebra that I need. Now, what I want to tell you about this algebra, forget about the small one. What I want you to tell about this algebra is that its growth and decreasing of this U bar is just this. It's just this algebra. I write the fusion written on that board. So it has 2p reducible representations. 2p just 2p reducible representations. And its growth and decreasing is just the fusion that I have in logarithmic conformal field theory. This doesn't prove anything. It just tells you that I was lucky enough to have found a quantum group from which I extract just the same algebraic structure that I have there. But that is not all. The center of this U bar is 3p minus 1 dimensional. And this is very much like just the same number that I have here. And then I recall that there is a general theory, as I said, due to Lubashenko, Turaev, and others, Kerler, partly Kerler, which tells you that a quasi-triangular Riemann Hopf algebra carries an SO2Z action. This is a very general statement, actually been shown in the categorical content context for categories. That when I have this 3p minus one dimensional center here, I can try to use that general construction for the SL2Z action to see, hoping that it would be related to the SL2Z action in conformal field theory on this strange extended set of characters. And I'm approaching the end of my talk because I could just end up telling you that this can be done and these two SL2Z representations are equivalent. This is just the same representation. Except that this algebra, as I said, is not quasi-triangular. It does not allow a universal R matrix. And it might look that, but whereas the construction of that action involves an R matrix and other structures on the Hopf algebra. So you have to have a Hopf algebra to be at least quasi-triangular. Defining this Lubashenko's structure on this algebra takes some work, and it is also, and the hints as to how this can be done come from conformal field theory. So if you update me on time again, 15 minutes. No. About right. Thank you. So the trick is that the SL2Z action on quantum groups involves different kind of things, what they call Greenfield mapping. For this algebra has to be factorizable, if they call it. Radford mapping. These are rather well-known things in the theory of quantum groups. For that, you have to find integral or co-integral on your quantum group. And you have to make your quantum group has to be Riemann. There must be an element with very special properties. And typically, all these, except for the Riemann, there must be a certain condition for it to exist, but are almost follow from a universal R matrix. And then you have a very general construction of SL2Z action. That it goes like T acts by Riemann, by the Riemann element, and S is a just a combination of Greenfield and Radford mappings composition. For that algebra is not quasi-triangular. But these can be defined. These two things can be defined even without the R matrix, and the properties of SL2Z representations can be checked, and the representation can be studied, and the final result is that this quantum group, its center, does carry an SL2Z representation, which is equivalent to the one that you have in logarithmic conformal field theory. And finally, at the moment, what I've said so far is well established. What is not yet is that the representation category of this quantum group has been now fully described. It amounts to, enumerating all representations, amounts to the study of representation of the what they call Kronecker quiver, that kind of thing. And all the representation category can be described in great detail. And the conjecture is that it is actually equivalent to the representation category of that W algebra, whose characters are kind of strange things, extended characters we have over there. So the summary is, the cardinalistic, this is the first case, I believe, where the cardinalistic correspondence has been worked out in a non-semi-simple case. And to my surprise, what is surprising is that it is more straightforward than in the rational case. You do not have to take special measures to reduce the size of objects on one side to make it correspond to the objects on the other side. So that's it. Thank you.